Our first speakers this morning are, as I said, are going to present together. We have Sherry Croning from the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, who's going to speak first. And Constance Holth from the Minnesota Department of Agriculture is going to follow her. And they're each going to talk about the MPCA and MDA ambient monitoring program activities that each of their organizations are currently working on. If you can, as I said, they're going to talk in series here. If you can hold your questions till after Constance speaks, that will probably be the most efficient. So, Sherry?
Hi, thanks for the opportunity to speak to you today. I'm going to be giving you an overview of the MPCA's Ambient Groundwater Quality Monitoring Network. And first, before I get into the guts of my presentation, I first want to give you an overview of the different agencies' roles in groundwater monitoring in Minnesota and also a history of groundwater quality monitoring that the PCA has done, because this frames the current network that we have in place. Minnesota is unlike many other states in that we have a multi-agency approach to groundwater monitoring. We have several different agencies that have responsibilities in different areas. Our Department of Natural Resources has the responsibility for groundwater quantity monitoring. And in this capacity, they operate the groundwater level monitoring network for the state. And there's three different agencies that do groundwater quality monitoring. That's us, the PCA, the Department of Agriculture, and also the Minnesota Department of Health. Our role in groundwater quality monitoring at PCA is to assess the extent of contamination by non-agricultural chemicals. And our sister agency at the Department of Ag monitors ag chemicals such as pesticides and fertilizers. And our sister agency over at the Department of Health monitors groundwater quality mainly in response to human health concerns, which is why they do things like the radium study that you had just heard presented. And to just go back, our roles in monitoring were further clarified in 2004 by a memorandum of agreement, which set forth for water quality monitoring a coordinated monitoring network for the state. And as part of this network, my agency, the PCA, and the Department of Ag maintain separate networks in different parts of the state. PCA's part of the groundwater quality monitoring network is to monitor non-ag chemicals, and so we maintain a network of wells in urban and undeveloped parts of the state. And our sister agency, the Department of Ag, maintains a series of wells in agricultural parts of the state. And the data that's collected from these two networks is used for a variety of purposes. First, to characterize the general quality of the state's groundwater. It's also used to inform drinking water protection efforts, identify threats to groundwater. And also, this chemistry data is also used to guide the development of practices to prevent groundwater degradation from occurring. And there's also coming to be, this information is coming to be used as part of TMDL studies, as our colleagues who work in surface waters on streams and lakes, they're starting to delve into the contamination from chemicals that are more soluble in the water, such as chloride, and they're increasingly looking for groundwater quality information as part of their total maximum daily load study efforts. And groundwater quality monitoring, this isn't a new activity for the PCA. It's something that we've done for a long time. Beginning in 1978, we had our first network that was developed by the U.S. Geological Survey. And since that time, we've conducted a few other groundwater quality studies. Most notably, we had the baseline study in the mid-90s, where we sampled almost 1,000 different wells in 14 principal aquifers. And then we followed up that by several land use studies, mainly in the late 1990s. And the current network that we have in place builds upon this wealth of data that we have accumulated over time. And currently, we're targeting our network in areas of the state where the groundwater is younger and more susceptible to contamination. And it also, we've built upon some of the gaps that we've identified in some of our previous studies, such as like in the baseline study, we mainly targeted domestic wells for sampling, and so we didn't collect any information in the upper parts of the aquifers. And this map shows the current wells that we sample as part of our network. Currently, we're sampling about 120 wells, and as part of our network, our wells are placed primarily in urban parts of the state, concentrating on the Twin Cities metro area. And we initially started this network. We also sampled wells that were present in the St. Cloud and Rochester area. And since then, we've started to expand to sampling wells in other parts of the state, especially undeveloped areas, to provide a baseline for comparison for our results. And this map shows the breakdown of what aquifers these wells are in. And most of the wells that we sample are contained either in the superficial sand and gravel aquifers or the Prairie du Chien Jordan, although we do sample a few wells in the buried sand and gravels and some in the Galena as well. And as part of this ambient monitoring effort, which we had actually began in 2004, we've located a series of wells that were screened right near the water table in their superficial sand and gravel aquifers. And we monitor these to serve as an early warning network for contaminants, because these are screened right near the water table where the water is likely within a couple of years old. And this, we use this network when we want to look to see for the presence of new contaminants out there that might be present in the groundwater system, like medicines, new emerging contaminants, those kinds of things. And when we first put this network together in 2004, we had very limited funding for groundwater monitoring. And so initially we've pieced this together with whatever existing wells that we were able to find. And with the passage of the Clean Water Legacy Act amendment, we have more funding to do groundwater quality monitoring, and so we're actively working to expand this network by adding an additional 150 wells. And we're doing this to better improve our knowledge on the effect that different urban land uses have on groundwater quality, and also the effect that the different materials that compose the superficial sand and gravel aquifers have on the chemistry. And so we've set forth a redesign for this network in which we want to both look at the composition of the superficial sand and gravel aquifers, that being the parts where it's where they are siliceous, where that parent material originated from the northeast, and also look at the aquifer where it's more calcareous in composition, and superimpose on that the effect that different land uses have on the groundwater quality. And the land uses that we're targeting for this assessment are residential in both sewered and unsewered areas, commercial, industrial, and again, we want undeveloped as a baseline for comparison. And our target goal for this network is to have 25 wells in each of these categories. So we have a total network of 200. And again, these are the land uses that we're actively looking to assess, and we've specified some very specific criteria for well placement, and we're actually going to get started on drilling next week for some of these wells. And for all of our wells in the network, we sample them once per year during the summer, and all of our wells are sampled by PCA-trained staff and interns. And for most of our samples, we collect them using a portable pump, either using new tubing or decontaminated tubing for some specialized sampling. And when we first started our monitoring network, we only had funding to do a few analytes, chloride, nitrate, and volatile organic compounds. Now with expanded funding, we've been able to extend our analyte list to a suite of over 100 different chemicals. And this includes major ions, nutrients, VOCs, trace elements. And at selected wells in our network, we sample to determine emerging contaminants. And also in cooperation with our sister agency at the Department of Ag, we pull pesticide samples for them at selected urban wells, typically about 20 per year. And in the field, we do measure specific conductance, pH, temperature, and dissolved oxygen concentration. And this map shows the 40 wells that we've had funding to do this year for emerging contaminants. And this is a suite of about 120 different chemicals, which includes pharmaceuticals, antibiotics, fire retardants, insect repellents, fragrances, hormones. And these samples are collected according to USGS protocol, and they're analyzed at the USGS laboratories. And for this round of sampling, we're targeting the parts of the network currently in place where we would expect these to be present to give us an estimate of the magnitude of any contamination by these chemicals. And all of the data collected by the PCA's Ambient Groundwater Quality Monitoring Network, as well as other PCA groundwater quality data, is available online in a system called Environmental Data Access. And to get to this site, you go to the PCA's homepage, click on where it says Quick Links that I've circled in red, and then you'll have to scroll down to where you see Environmental Data Access. And if you click on there, you can get to the data in two ways. You can either search for it via map, where you click on one of the dots, which represents a well with water chemistry data, and you can get the data that way. Or else if you have some more specific criteria, if you want to, say, get the data for one particular county or just one particular type of monitoring effort, such as ambient, you can also use a text-based search to get information. And that concludes my portion of the presentation, and I'm going to hand it over to Constance.
Good morning. As was previously mentioned, my name is Constance Holth. I'm a hydrologist, and for the past 13 years, I've been monitoring groundwater quality across the state of Minnesota for the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. And today, I'd like to give you a brief overview of the department's groundwater monitoring program. In today's presentation, I'd like to touch on the following points. First of all, statutory requirements that mandate that the Minnesota Department of Agriculture monitor water quality across the state of Minnesota. I'd like to talk a little bit about the program's overall goals and objectives. I'll touch on the historical as well as the current groundwater monitoring that's going on at the department. I'll talk about program design. And last but not least, if you're interested in retrieving some of the data, I can tell you where to go to do that. First of all, why does the Minnesota Department of Agriculture monitor water quality across the state? The answer is, it's the law. Under Minnesota State Statute, Chapters 18B, the Pesticide Control Law, it states that the Minnesota Department of Agriculture is responsible for determining the impacts of pesticides on the environment and for the development of a pesticide management plan. The Pesticide Control Law also states that pesticides may not be used in a way that will cause unreasonable adverse effects on the environment. Under Minnesota State Statutes, Chapter 103H, the Groundwater Protection Act, it states that the Minnesota Department of Agriculture must determine if detections of agricultural chemicals are due to normal use. And if so, there must be the development of voluntary BMPs, also known as best management practices, to prevent or minimize the source to the extent practicable. There also needs to be the promotion of BMPs via education and demonstration projects, the evaluation of BMP adoption and effectiveness, and the consideration of regulation if BMPs are proven to be ineffective. In speaking to the statutory requirements, then, it can be said that the goal of the monitoring unit is to provide information on the impacts of the routine use of pesticides on the quality of Minnesota's water resources. This can be accomplished through the measurement and occurrence of through measuring the occurrence and concentration of pesticides in water resources of the state, and by evaluating the land use, pesticide use, and hydrologic characteristics that influence water quality, while providing information that's gained through the program while sharing information gained through the program with others in the state, such as the state's farmers, policymakers, scientists, and other citizens. In 1985, the Minnesota Department of Agriculture started monitoring water quality across the state in existing wells. Approximately 10 years' worth of data was collected. Some of the common compounds that were analyzed for were atrazine plus its digradates, alachlor, cyanazine, metolachlor, metribuzin, and acetachlor, all of which are corn, bean, and potato herbicides. Through the information collected, it was determined that, as expected, the central sand plain region of central Minnesota and also the southeast karst region of Minnesota were the most sensitive areas. It was decided that, being such, these areas should be the most heavily monitored to get a conservative idea of how agriculture was affecting groundwater in Minnesota. In order to accomplish this task, areas with sensitive soils were coupled with areas where land use was agricultural in nature in order to provide meaningful feedback regarding the impacts of routine use of agricultural chemicals and the effectiveness of the best management practices. In the late 1990s, a statistical design was developed for a monitoring network that was placed across the central sand plain of Minnesota. The statistical design was actually based on atrazine, which is the most commonly found pesticide in Minnesota. 85 sites were placed across the central sand plain of Minnesota. A grid-based design was used to randomly place the wells within areas of sandy soils. We needed at least 50% sandy soils for a site to qualify, and within those sandy soils, we needed at least 50% agricultural land use. Each site consists of 1 to 3 monitoring wells with 4-foot overlapping screens, which are placed so that we can monitor with variable static water level conditions. The number of wells that we put at each site was actually determined using any available groundwater observation well data in the area. Here I am, hard at work. From 2000 through 2008, samples were collected quarterly with an entire population of the wells divided into 3 groups. And each site was sampled then once every 9 months, which resulted in a complete set of seasons every 3 years. Due to limited lab capacity issues back in 2008, statistical analysis was done to test for seasonality. Once it was determined that seasonality was not a factor, sampling was then reduced to twice a year. The groups of wells were then divided into 2, which resulted in each site being sampled once a year. In southeast Minnesota, groundwater sampling looks very different. Here you can see John Hines, our lead groundwater hydrologist, collecting a sample from Cold Spring near Zumbrota Falls. And for obvious reasons, you can see that spring sampling in the monitoring unit at the Department of Ag is one of the more coveted positions or tasks, I should say. Monitoring in southeast Minnesota has also been occurring since 1985. The southeast has much of the state's karst geology, which of course makes it highly susceptible to contamination from activities at the ground surface. It's been thought that the best way to sample groundwater in this area is by utilizing the naturally occurring springs, as they're abundant. They're also very representative of the southeast as far as environmental conditions are concerned, and they're relatively cheap and easy to sample. More recently, however, as a check on drinking water, we also began to sample a small number of domestic wells in the area. That helps me segue into how the monitoring unit or the monitoring program within the Department of Agriculture has changed over the years and expanded. After years of monitoring in the sensitive areas of Minnesota, it was determined that the next step would be to expand statewide. In 2004, the MDA, in conjunction with the University of Minnesota, divided the state into 10 pesticide management regions. These regions were based on areas of similar cropping practices, soil characteristics, hydrogeologic conditions, rainfall, and agroecosystem classifications. It was determined for statistical reasons that it would be optimal to have 7 to 10 wells within each PMR. We first looked for qualifying existing wells that we could use within the Quaternary Water Table Aquifer, which is generally made up of sand and gravel and usually part of the glacial outwash. If no suitable wells were found or if we couldn't find enough to satisfy our protocol, we would then install new wells in each PMR. Our groundwater monitoring program currently consists of monitoring wells in PMRs 1, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8. And I'll see if... Our monitoring program currently consists of wells in PMRs 1, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8. 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8, excuse me. And we're monitoring springs and domestic wells in PMR 9, as well as various urban wells in PMR, in the metro area, which we call PMR 10, and in PMRs 9 and 4. And Sherry had mentioned that we're doing this in cooperation with the MPCA. They generally go out and collect the samples when they're doing their other sampling, and then they will log them into the MDA lab, or they'll drop them off with MDA personnel. Currently, in 2010, the 85 sites in PMR4 are sampled once a year, either in the spring or the fall. PMRs 1, 5, 6, 7, and 8, all having 7 to 10 wells, are sampled twice a year in April and October. Of the 12 springs sampled in PMR 9, 3 springs are sampled quarterly, 9 springs are sampled 4 times a year with oversampling done in the spring, and 15 domestic wells are sampled in PMR 9 once every year. Approximately 15 to 20 urban wells are sampled each year within PMRs 4, 9, and 10 in partnership with the PCA in August and September. So what do we look for? Well, we first need to determine what pesticides are being used in Minnesota and what are the patterns of use. What pesticides are being applied to the fields in Minnesota? Looking at those pesticides closer, what are the environmental fate and transport properties of these pesticides? Are we likely to find them in groundwater? Do we have the analytical capacity to test for these pesticides? What are the costs associated with analysis? All of these things are taken into consideration when we formulate an analyte list. Through 2009, we had 3 different methodologies that we were using, base neutral samples, chlorodegs, and acid herbicides. We were constrained to about 1,000 samples per year that we could submit to the lab, and that was both for water quality for surface water and groundwater. In 2008, through funding through an LCCMR grant, we were provided the opportunity to develop additional capabilities for analyzing pesticides in groundwater and surface water. The grant was used to purchase equipment for a liquid chromatography with tandem mass spectrometry, analytical method capable of detecting a much broader suite of chemicals and capable of detecting some chemicals at much lower levels. Clean Water Legacy funds were also used to purchase a second set of LC-MS/MS equipment and to pay for the time for 2 analysts to run samples. Our current analyte list, with the expanded lab capability and with the new methodologies then, provides us with the opportunity to currently analyze for just over 100 pesticides. 1,000 samples were submitted to the lab in 2009, and it's anticipated that 1,300 samples will be submitted in 2010 and 1,600 samples in 2011. The GCMS analyte list contains the base neutral scan of the past along with various new analytes, and detections are reported as parts per billion as was previously the case. The LC-MS/MS analyte list contains the analytes from both the degradate and acid scans of the past along with various new analytes, and detections are reported in parts per trillion, which is new for the monitoring unit. With all the monitoring that the MDA has done in the past and is currently doing, there's been a great deal of information collected over the years, so I'm sure you're interested in knowing where you can go to retrieve the data. All of our water quality monitoring results each year are actually posted on the Minnesota Department of Agriculture's website in our annual water quality monitoring report, and they're available for download, and I'll post the website address at the end of the presentation. You can also find there our annual work plans as well as any design documents or reports on special monitoring studies that have been done. Our information is also available. Our raw data results can be obtained through the MPCA's Environmental Data Access site, which Sherry gave you an overview of. And please feel free to check out all of our information at www.state.mn.us/monitoring. You'll also find the names of our supervisor and section manager, along with phone numbers in case you have any further questions. I can also be reached at constance.holth@state.mn.us or by telephone at 320-223-6600. Thank you. I don't know that I'd call them surprising. No. And all of the raw data, as well as a report that summarizes all of the findings, like I said, can be found online. It's a quite extensive report. Yes? Within the report, yes. Like I said before, we actually have anywhere from 1 to 3 wells at each site. So when you go in to review the results, you can look by site ID, which is a grid number that we have, but within the site ID, you will also see the unique numbers for each well. Most of them are actually in the glacial outwash. If we're in an area where we have some riverbed sand and gravel, we'll occasionally get a site near a river, but for the most part, they really aren't.
Well, then, and you heard in the last set of presentations that the Minnesota Department of Health also does ambient monitoring work. And if you're interested in some of that, that's mostly focused on compliance monitoring and other activities associated with characterizing drinking water supplies in Minnesota. And some of that information is available in annual reports and special reports on our website.